Welcome to Zero to CEO, where seasoned entrepreneurs will teach you how to succeed. I'm your host, Jason Sherman. In today's episode of Zero to CEO, I'm going to talk to American oil producer RJ Burr. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Jason. How are you doing today?
Not bad. And we're going to be talking about beyond the barrel of oil and opportunity. This is my first time talking about oil on the show. I'm excited to find out how people can, you know, capitalize this. And before we started recording, you said that I'm already invested in oil in some way. So what do you mean by that exactly?
Well, everybody is. Most people don't realize that you could randomly go to any city in America and just randomly grab one person, and I'd be willing to bet everything I own they had at least two products of oil on. And not even know it for the most part, because oil has just really, the biggest disservice, I believe, education-wise, that's been done to our country is the lack of knowledge on the oil industry and what it's done for the modern world.
What has it done for the modern world?
It built it. The modern world did not begin until the United States drilled the first oil well back in the late 1800s. When Edwin Drank drilled up in Titusville, PA, and produced oil for the first time, all of a sudden you had transportation. All of a sudden you had basically the entire modern world was built on a foundation of oil. And you know, I'm an old movie buff, and one of my favorite movies is The Usual Suspects. And one of my favorite quotes from that movie is the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist. And when I look at the oil industry, I kind of modify that quote a little bit. The greatest trick environmentalist ever pulled was convincing the world that oil was bad. Because you want to live in the third world, you want to live in the Stone Age, remove oil from your life and you're going to be there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, cars, planes, any kind of transportation, we wouldn't be able to travel around the world as easily. We'd have to be sitting on wooden boats that take six months to get from one place to the next, or even years.
Well, go look at Germany. Go look through the news stories last year, Germany going through the winter after they kicked Vlad and his gas out of their country. You tell me what's environmental about clear cutting pristine forest to burn for wood for heating your home because you don't have natural gas. Ask those Germans if they'd rather have their natural gas or their forest.
Deforestation is another big problem around the world. So tell me why. I mean, we just talked about why oil is such a critical resource, but maybe people don't realize it. So maybe we're addicted to oil. Do you think we are?
No, without a doubt. Oh, okay. Without a doubt, we are.
So it's kind of like a drug almost. We need it.
Well, but it's blood pressure medicine. It's not cocaine. I mean, if that's the comparison you're going to use, but because I'm not saying the oil and gas industry is harmless, and you know, there have been
obviously there's downsides.
Yeah, anytime you have an industry that is this lucrative, you're going to draw some bad actors to it. And there's no reason to try to deny it. There's nothing I can, you know, it has happened. However, that doesn't change the fact of what oil does for us. When you look at the environmental, let's just get in the environmental world. When you look at all the advancements in bringing CO2 levels down, and that's a whole different argument. And let's just say most environmentalists don't want to get in an argument with me over CO2 because they make no sense and they don't know what they're talking about. But the fact of the matter is, when you look at the reduction in CO2, it's from how we burn oil. That's where the advancements have come. I mean, when it comes to solar panels, well, look at all the oil it takes to create those. And they're still not efficient. They still can't do what oil does. Same thing with wind, same thing with hydro, same thing. The only thing that really makes sense, let's just say you believe in all of it, and let's just say you think humans are killing the earth, and let's buy into the load real quick. Well, if your goal is to save the world, yet to do that, we have to destroy the world first, you're not a serious person. Which, to go with lithium batteries, to go with solar, that's what they're going to ask us to do. We're going to have to rake Earth like we have never done it before for the raw materials. Now, you look at that route and say, okay, well, that doesn't seem like a very efficient route to save the world. What are the alternatives? Well, if you really wanted to go to an alternative that would accomplish those goals, you go natural gas nuclear. We already have the infrastructure for the most part built natural gas.
Yeah, and apparently the U.S. doesn't really have enough nuclear power, according to what I've learned, and maybe other countries have even more. But we're talking about oil today, and you have a family history of oil, right? Like, you go how back how way back do you guys go with oil production?
Oh, golly, I'm third generation. My grandpa was a company man back in the Wild West days. Now, my wow. mom's a little unique. She has two older brothers that are 21 and 26 years older than her.
Oh,
and
wow.
And so she was a baby boomer. And so she essentially had three dads, but all my uncles were in oil. My dad got in oil in 1973. He brought me on location. First time I was on location, I was 7 years old. Made my first sale 3 months out of high school and haven't looked back. This is all I've ever done. In fact, my son just started with us. He'll be the fourth generation oil guy. I was one of those. I didn't let him come work for me straight out of high school and straight out of college. No, you go in the real world, go learn some work at it. Go see what it's like to work for a boss.
Yeah, I mean,
now it's time.
It sounds like when it comes to oil, like, I mean, because obviously I don't know anybody in the oil industry. I mean, there's probably a lot of big domestic oil producers, but it sounds like you got to be part of like a family. There has to be a family history to it or some kind of connection to it, right? Because you can't just like get into oil because it's a like you said, generations and generations. So just to kind of break through that. So what you did was you decided, well, I'm going to build a company called Panex that allows the everyday person to invest in oil in some way. So walk me through why you started Panex. Before we get into how it works, I want to know why you started it. What was the day where you said, well, I want to start this business for this reason, and here's why?
Okay. Well, we've been fortunate. I'd love to say we're rocket scientists, but we just happened to be in the right places at the right time and made the right decisions. Here about, I was 12, 13 years ago, what we call our first life in oil ended when Marathon Oil bought our family company. And we entered into early retirement. I was in my mid-30s. Took me a couple of months to realize I wasn't going to make the PGA Tour. And it took me a couple of years to finally go stir crazy. And it'll actually be July of this year will be 8 years that we started Panex. And the reason we started it was simple. One, we love oil. This is all I've ever done. And right. I'm too young to retire. I was going stir crazy. And
I see a couple of guitars in the background. So I'm assuming you practiced a lot.
Well, I mean, there's only so much you can do. And well, this is what we've dreamed of. I mean, our first life. Now, what we realized in our first life in oil is for an oil company to be efficient, successful, and firing on all cylinders, it's almost impossible to do it with one guy wearing every hat. And at that point in time, my dad ran everything in the company. And so what we did is we split the company up into two sides. One side was the fundraising and operation side, and the other side was the field and the geological side. And the reason being, if you can't fund your own programs internally, you're always at the mercy of somebody else who can.
Mm.
And
which comes with their own rules and ordering around.
It is hard to expect somebody to paddle the boat as hard as you are when they're on the shore telling you how to paddle.
I mean, that's not much different from, you know, my line of work, which is entrepreneurship and startups. When you take on an investor, now they start barking orders. They start telling you how to do things. And you're the guy who came up with the vision. You're the guy who came up with the business. You're the one who knows what you want to do. And they're trying to, like you said, steer you off course. So it sounds like you had to do something similar to protect yourselves.
It's just really, it's a function of controlling your own destiny. I mean, if I have to wait for somebody to fund their program, which is my program, then I have to wait for their schedule. I have to do it when they're ready. And so it's just it doesn't put you in a freeing position. And when you can control your own fundraising and do it all in-house, then you can set your own schedule. Now, regardless of how much money you can raise, that's where the other side of the business comes in. If you can't effectively find oil and produce it efficiently, once again, you're always at the mercy of somebody else
right.
who can.
I mean, was that your goal with Panex, was to essentially be able to fund the operations, or what was the vision behind it?
What we saw, and when we cranked up, it was me, my dad, and my brother. When we cranked up, we really saw a converging of, it was really six or seven different things we saw coming together that had never come together before. One was investment in oil and gas. Okay, when you look at supply, demand, and you look at, you know, when you put this whole picture together, Well, look at left. Let's look at supply. Okay. Currently, we are consuming about 15 million barrels a day more than we produce. They anticipate for that number to be roughly 30 to 40 million by 2030.
Wow.
Well, so you look at that and you're like, we're not producing enough oil to cover what we consume. Well, does demand seem to be going down? Well, 83% of the world is just now beginning to use oil. Ugh. What do you think they're going to do? You think they're going to say, oh, Greta, you're right. We need to take care of the environment. We're going to go live back in the Stone Age. Or are they going to tell Greta, hey, Greta, shove it. We're moving to the modern world. You know, that's the dilemma. You know, that's what they're
asking. Well, it's been happening for like 10, 20 years or even longer, where these other countries are finally starting to catch up. And now they want to live the American lifestyle, exactly. The American dream. And it is getting a little out of control. But what could we do? They want a piece of it, you know?
Well, the yearning of all humanity is to improve your life.
Yeah.
And when you look at that, so you're like, okay, well, demand doesn't seem to be going down anytime soon. And you say, okay, well, what about supply? Well, when you look at investment, upstream oil is finding more oil to produce.
Right.
Producing what we, you know, finding more oil to produce to cover what we've already consumed. Well, in 2013, we invested worldwide right at $1 trillion in upstream development.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be lucky to hit $300 billion this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have investment to find more oil down almost 60%, maybe 70%. So you go, we're consuming more than we produce, and we're not investing enough to produce enough.
Hmm.
Surely there's an alternative. Because I'm not the only guy who sees this.
Right.
And so then you go and you look at alternative energy. And I don't want to crush them, but the fact of the matter is there's nothing out there right now that can economically and effectively replace oil. For a solar farm to produce the amount of energy that we need annually as a country, it would take the most modern solar panels on the planet. It would take a solar farm the size of New Jersey, and it would require the sun to shine 365 days a year, 24 hours a day at Arizona summertime intensity. That doesn't seem possible. Same thing with wind. And so just the logistics aren't there. So you're like, wow, demand's going up, supply's going down, and there's nothing to replace oil with. And so those were the three main factors that hit there. And then you look at, well, who's producing the oil in America? That's the biggest untold story out there.
Yeah.
Is most people don't realize that 83% of your oil, 90% of your natural gas, and more than 90% of the wells drilled domestically are drilled by roughly 9,000 independent companies that average 12 employees or less.
Wow.
That's the American oil industry.
That's now, interesting. So that's kind of like the foundation behind what Panex was. It sounds like you were able to thrive through oil market crash. You were able to figure out, you know, how to get successful new drill sites. I mean, it sounds like you guys were able to do a lot of things, and your business kind of revolves around people being able to invest in this industry without having to know much about it. So how can they learn more about what it is you guys do and how they can be a part of it, how they can invest in it? Give us like the TLDR on that as we wrap up.
The best place to go would be panex.us/learn. On that website, we put together, it was specifically designed for individuals who've never looked at oil and gas before. We have Oil and Gas 101 that just gives you a basic education about the industry. Oil and Gas 102 explains the tax benefits. They're some of the best tax benefits in the world. We have some videos in there. It's to educate you on oil, because like I was telling you earlier, we are all in the oil business, whether you want to be or not.
Right.
We are all paying for it. In every product you buy, whether it's the transportation cost to get it there or whether that product's actually made from oil, whether it's going to the pump, we are all in the oil business. Well, if we can, as a company, if we can get that flow of revenue coming back to you, then we're helping you more than you can possibly imagine. Because the fact of the matter is, when it comes to what we've done, all we did was we saw an opportunity and we looked at history. When you look at every economic crisis in our country's history, when the crash happens, there's always one or a group of people that come out of the other side looking like geniuses. And when you string their story together, they really have two common characteristics they share. The first is when the crash happened, they were liquid. They had cash on hand and could do something. The second is when their opportunity presented itself, they had the courage to take that cash and push it in the middle of the table and make a move.
Yep.
And that's exactly what we did.
Nice. Thank you, RJ. This is really awesome. If you guys want to get involved in the oil industry, then you know where to go. Panex.us/learn. Hope you learned something, and we'll see you in the next episode. Hope you enjoyed the episode. If you learned something today, please support this podcast by subscribing to it, sharing it with your friends, and leaving a 5-star review. You can learn more about me at jasonsherman.org, where you'll find information about my book, also called Strap On Your Boots, available on Amazon, as well as my course called Startup Essentials on Udemy or Skillshare. I'll see you in next week's episode.